Hi, this is Jeff D., the host of the Nonprofits Atheist Podcast. The Nonprofits is made possible by volunteers and the generous support of listeners like you. If the promotion of positive atheist culture and the separation of church and state are values you hold dear, please consider contributing by becoming an ACA member or visiting our product page at evolvefish.com under the Partner tab. Thank you.
And we are the Nonprofits. I'm Dennis Hubay, along with Jeff D. and Russell Glasser, in Austin, Texas, on the 19th of July, 2017, urging you to stay in your homes and not to answer the door. Our sponsor, the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state, is issuing this public service announcement in light of the recent outbreaks of religion our nation has experienced. To repeat, if you see a religious person, do not approach them. Instead, find a safe location and call the ACA voicemail at 512-220-6561 or alert their website at www.atheist-community.org. The Nonprofits broadcast live every first and third Wednesday of each month from 7:30 to 9 Central Time with updates and news about this tragic and violent outbreak of religious belief. If you know a loved one who has become a religious person or have a question about how you can protect yourself from them, you can join our chat room by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. Remember, be vigilant, have a plan, and don't panic.
Thank you, Dennis.
There we go.
Wise words for our time.
That's right.
Sad to report, there is still not a cure.
No.
All you can do is, you know, prop them up, keep them comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you've been scratched or bitten by a religious person, seek immediate medical help.
Well, that's what our show is for. Is for, you know, making religious people comfortable.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
How's everybody doing? Been a couple of weeks.
Doing well.
Good.
We're past the middle of July now.
Mm-hmm.
That is true.
Almost halfway through 2017.
Yep. Mm.
Yeah.
Who knows? We have actually survived this long.
It's been an interesting year.
Yeah. The Chinese curse is really pounding it, I tell you.
What?
We live in interesting times.
Oh, that.
Oh,
that,
oh yeah. Okay.
All right. All right.
Damn you.
Yeah. Well, so I actually do have quite a bit of listener mail today.
Well,
no way.
Excellent.
And Russell, I imagine you've got a goodly amount of news.
Goodly would be an apt description.
Would you like to go first today?
Sure.
A gooder amount.
Let's have since we've just come out of this long discussion of 2017. Let's talk about something that's happened in 2017.
Yes. Yeah. Well, a number of people have been eager to bring a story to my attention, including
what? What?
Okay,
what?
Off to a great start. This is a Ken Ham story.
Aha!
Canned ham.
Through my tabs. Oh, there we go. Okay, according to the Lexington Herald Leader, on June 29th, Williamstown City Attorney Jeffrey Shipp sent a letter to the Biblical Amusement Park, Ark Encounter, rejecting its request to be exempted from a new safety tax because it is a religious organization. Shipp said it was clear that Ark Encounter is a for-profit entity, which is how it has been listed with the Kentucky Secretary of State's office since 2011. Uh-huh. But The day before, Ark Encounter LLC sold its main parcel of land, the one with the large-scale Noah's Ark, for $10 to its nonprofit affiliate, Crosswater Canyon. So,
wow.
So the
$10. Well, the organization, you get what you pay for, I say.
Yeah.
Yes. I think they overpaid, frankly. But
wow. Christian scamming people. How shocking.
From the sound of this story, they weren't even particularly subtle about it. They were like, you know, oh, you say we're a for-profit business? Okay, I will take $10 out of my right hand and put it in my left hand, and I still own the Ark. Now and can I have the exemption?
Abracadabra, I'm no longer for-profit.
Yep.
God. Typical. So, freaking typical.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I believe this is the first step, Williamstown City Councilman Kim Krupper said. The impact would be far larger than just Williamstown, for what? The council is scheduled to meet Tuesday night with ARC officials to continue talking about their differences, but Krupper and Mayor Rick Skinner said they think a lawsuit is imminent. The council approved in April a 50-cent tax on every admission ticket sold at ARC Encounter. Oh, that's new. Saying the money is needed to upgrade the city's emergency services. And you remember when they pitched the ARC park in the first place.
Oh, I was going to bring in so much money.
They lied.
Yeah, my understanding
about it being beneficial to the city.
But my understanding is that the turnout has been meager. So I don't quite believe the city when they say we now need all this extra money for emergency services because of your huge crowds.
Actually, from what I've been reading, it seems to me that Ken Ham has been eager to play up the idea that it's been meager in order to beg for money more. But somebody compared it to the traffic of like your typical museum, which is something that they compare themselves
somewhat
to.
Somewhat anemic.
And and it's pretty good.
Oh, okay.
I mean, compared to Disney World, sure, it's not great. But I mean, the Ark Park gets a regular steady flow of traffic, maybe not as much as they estimated in the first place, but
sure, when they were lying about that when they were lying about the projected attendance in order to get benefits from the town, they exaggerated those figures, and now they're lying about how many people are actually coming so they can get believers to give them money, and now they're lying about what kind of business they are so they can avoid a tax. So it's lying for profit. It's lying for dollars.
So according to these this article, the tickets that they're charging a 50-cent tax on, they are $40 each or $28 for kids.
Wow.
$40 to $40. Thing.
Oh, and they've got big garish signs for concessions that are obviously typically overpriced.
Mm-hmm. Now I see that sign for the Ark Dog. It's a hot dog, right?
It's like a hot dog.
Is it a chili
$7 hot dog.
$7 hot dog.
Yeah,
it's a chili dog.
Wow.
Right?
It does look vaguely like a chili dog. Yeah.
It's vaguely like an Ark in that, you know, the bun serves as the hull of the ship
dog part sticking out the top. It looks as much like an Ark as all hot dogs do, I guess.
Sure. But I get what they're going for. But they missed a trick. They could have had little plastic animals on like toothpicks.
Yeah.
That you could stick in the top so that they would be riding in the Ark.
They could be animal crackers or gummy animals.
Yeah, the bun is the wooden exterior.
I wouldn't put crackers or gummies on a hot dog.
The hot dog is the meaty interior.
Crazy?
Well, it's thematic.
Nobody puts gummy bears on a hot dog.
I don't know what you could put past Ken Ham. So.
Real creationists don't put...
Plus, you wouldn't want gummy bears are awfully rainbow colored.
They are.
If you put more than
one...
You can't have gay bears on the Ark. Right. I wouldn't imagine.
Teddy bears. So thank you to the many people who submitted that, including including Jeremiah Traeger.
I will double that offer and offer them $20 for the thing.
Yeah.
$20, guys.
Yes, well, somebody
I'll triple it.
Wow.
Damn.
$30 for the whole thing.
Somebody
that
on our
you're recouping your loss and adding an additional $20.
That's my last offer.
You could almost go out and see a movie for that these days and get a proper cinema hot dog.
Right. Whoa. Somebody on our Facebook group did suggest that perhaps the state of Kentucky could now use eminent domain to repurchase this land for the last price paid.
That would be really cool.
But that seems unlikely.
I'll bet a religious organization will believe that they're immune to that, too.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Of course.
All right. Thank you, Russell.
Religious freedom to do anything we want.
Daniel wrote, hello. Owing to the medical report from my hospital, I wish to will you $5.3 million. Please reply me by stating your full name, address, telephone number.
Okay.
Wow.
I think this is for you, Russell.
Would they happen to be operating out of Nigeria by any chance?
That's right. Daniel from Nigeria wrote. moving right along.
Just along.
That's obviously one of those things. Yes. That was actually not sent to us.
I like the meme of the huge stack of money found in the apartment of a dead Nigerian prince who couldn't give it away.
Yep.
I mean,
why can't I hold all this money?
So last episode, we did a whole bit about St. Peter. Thank you, Dennis.
Yes.
Certainly
you're
did.
Welcome.
Yes.
That was fun.
In response to Dennis's question. And we've got a certain number of responses to that. Duke says, I wanted to put in my two cents on your riffs on St. Peter. For those who didn't listen last episode, Dennis was asking, what was it?
Who judges us?
Right. Where exactly the judgment is coming from, right?
Yeah.
And we eventually got down to St. Peter outside the pearly gates with his book.
The Book of Life.
Right.
And he sees if your name is in it, and that's it.
And we did a whole thing.
Yeah.
So, Duke says, first, if I understand correctly, St. Peter at the pearly gates is a purely Catholic myth. Based on the fact that St. Peter was the first pope.
Okay.
Remember that Jesus said to Peter, you are the rock on which I shall build my church. Unquote.
Ouch.
Since the name Peter comes from the Greek word for rock, Petros, this was both a pun in Greek, which Jesus didn't speak, and a way to tell everyone that the Roman Catholics were the ones who literally guarded the gates of heaven, which is why St. Peter is there in front of the pearly gates. That may well be true, but, you know, I was not raised Catholic, and yet I got a face full of this Peter and the gates imagery, possibly not from the church that my parents dragged me to, which was Methodist, but possibly just from popular culture because, you know, heaven can wait.
For sure.
Yeah.
Shit like that. So granted that there it has its origins in a specifically Catholic thing, I think most people are aware of the imagery. Anybody want to say anything about that? About the Catholicness of the Peter thing? Do we have to do a whole other
–
do you have a whole other question is apart from the Catholics, where does the judgment come from?
But it's just – it's in the Bible, isn't it? And it's just that the Catholics interpret it differently than the others? I mean, they were talking about the pearly gates, the gates made of giant pearl, you know.
Were they? I mean, I am not enough of an authority. I don't remember if we did look it up. And the thing is, like, people all the time mistake things as coming from the Bible when they're like from Shakespeare.
Some poetry or Shakespeare.
Or you know, like the classical imagery of hell mostly comes from like, you know, Dante. Yeah. And a lot of stuff comes from Paradise Lost.
Dennis, I looked it up in Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And Wikipedia did not say this is a specifically Catholic thing, at least in the bit that I read, but that doesn't mean that it's not.
And it said the words, and it said this: these descriptions are in the Bible.
It was in Revelation.
Yeah.
Okay.
So kind of weird.
I mean,
I have to go by what's in the rule book
it
here.
It doesn't specifically mention St. Peter standing there as a cosmic bouncer. You know, Jeff, you've often said that the Bible is the big book of multiple choice.
Yeah, but it does describe the book of life. And so,
yeah, I mean, people choose what they think they remember.
You get to choose your own adventure book of life, right. Dennis.
And it doesn't even necessarily all have to come from the Bible. People just sort of mash up the things that they've heard in their
lives.
Sure,
they write their own fanfic. Yeah. It's
right. So, but Duke, point taken.
That may be so.
I don't think that negates the value of the answer to the question.
The Catholics usually
– there are certainly more to talk about there when it comes to other –
And the Catholics usually have the more interesting interpretation of the Bible, because I think isn't the Catholics who came up with all the, you know, military nomenclature for the angels and all this other stuff?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know, man. I'm not a Bible guy.
Cherubim.
I honestly don't care what that thing says.
That is nuts.
Second, a joke. A joke from Duke. And I'm going to paraphrase here because I don't like the way Duke tells it. St. Peter's at the gates, and he's tired, and he wants to take a little break, and he sees Jesus walking around, and he says, "Hey, Jesus, could you watch the gates for me for a bit? I've just gotta get some time off." And Jesus, being a nice guy, says, "Sure." And he stands there with the book, at the head of the line, and an old man walks up to him, and Jesus says, "Tell me your story, old man." The old man says, "Well, there's not much to know about me. I'm just an old carpenter who plied his trade all his life. My son, though, he was something special. He had a miraculous birth and wandered around the lands interacting with the poor and with criminals. And he was betrayed by his closest friends and descended into darkness. But when those nails came out of his hands, he taught the whole world what it meant to be human, what it meant to be good, what it meant to be alive." And Jesus looked at the old man, and tears streamed from his face, and he grabbed him and hugged him and said, "Father!" And the old man looked around and said, "Pinocchio?"
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you, Duke.
All right. Well, speaking of,
I don't remember the talking animals. Weren't there talking animal characters in that story?
Yeah.
In the Bible. I don't think there's talking animals.
Speaking of,
oh wait, I'm sorry. Yes, there is. There's a donkey. Sorry. Go ahead.
You're stepping all over my segue. Speaking of myths that that are not as people recall them. Our producer Vern asked me to cover this story from the UK Independent. King Solomon's legendary fabulous wealth in hidden gold mines never existed, says historian.
Huh.
Okay.
Well, King Solomon's gold mines, which the Bible says helped him store wealth amounting to more than 2.3 trillion pounds, are a complete myth, historians believe. The biblical ruler is said to have accumulated 500 tons of pure gold from the mines, but experts now say that the pot of wealth is unlikely to have ever existed. Historians claim the Old Testament king's story has been misinterpreted, and King Solomon was, in fact, an Egyptian pharaoh.
All right. How does he know this?
That seems like a tangent. Like
it's pretty bizarre.
What I mean, there is the assumption that he existed at all, which shouldn't be a foregone conclusion from a story in the Bible. Uh-huh. And B, whether he's a pharaoh or some Jewish king doesn't necessarily have any bearing on the question of whether his piles of booty exist. Right?
At the risk of being accused of asking questions about your story, Russell,
does it
actually go into justifications for this guy's
Ralph
statements?
Ellis is cited. He's a British historian and author.
Yeah.
Said that finding his lost mines is about as likely as taking a dip in the Fountain of Youth. Well, that sounds pretty colloquial to me. He did say there was a grain of historical truth to the story. According to the Bible, King Solomon was staggeringly wealthy, he said. Yet successive generations of theologians and archaeologists have scoured the Holy Land looking for his capital city, palace, temple, and wealth without any success.
Huh.
Why?
Huh.
Who the hell is Ralph Ellis guy? Because now he goes on to say, my research suggests that there is a factual basis for the story of Solomon and his riches, but that it was heavily amended and obscured by biblical scribes.
Yeah.
This is awfully strange.
Devoid of detail.
Yeah. What evidence are they pointing to that –
I'm looking this guy up. I am the first to be willing to believe that something in the Bible ain't so, but I'm interested in how that was determined.
Yeah, I'm hunting down his CV because
okay. So are we moving on?
Move on.
You move on.
Okay. Continuing in the responses to the St. Peter story.
Yeah.
TJ from Ohio says, loved Dennis's question about heavenly admission methods. Something you didn't consider was poor Peter's misery.
Misery?
Given current death rates, about 151,600 people tip over every day. That means that he has to deal with two people every second, assuming he doesn't get a bathroom break or need to sleep. As the world's population grows, the rate of applicants will also increase.
Mm-hmm.
If he's a saint, by definition, he was supposed to be a pretty big wheel in heaven, one of the most favored, and so on. Yet his afterlife consists of being a bouncer checking Evites for all eternity.
If this is
what one of the big guy's favorites gets, what happens to an ordinary schmo?
Good question.
Okay, so you forget that the Christians have the excuse of outside of time.
Sure.
Which it doesn't actually ever say that anywhere in the Bible, but they've come up with that because they need to. Yeah. And it just solves all questions relating to how long this took
or
when did this happen.
There's nothing to say that in front of the pearly gates there's a huge backlog.
Right.
Billions of people standing and waiting their turn.
Right. There's like a 700-year backlog right now.
5 minutes with each person. That would suck.
but
outside of time. So really, they have as much time as they want. I would think if you're going to play the outside of time card, then you got no time. What you have is actually no time because time – is this thing, and you're outside of it, so you don't get any.
Wibbly, wobbly.
Whereas the way they play it, you get infinite amounts.
Right.
Who knows? All I can say for sure is, judging by what religious believers, right-wing religious believers believe now, all you know for a fact is that you're not – if you go to heaven, you don't get any handouts.
Right.
You do have to work for every dollar you make. God. But you're not taxed. But you have to work.
Have to pick up the litter off the streets leading up to the pearly
gates. And bootstraps are really popular.
Yes.
Right. And you've got an infinite amount of time. So if you're a street cleaner, you're going to be doing that for all eternity.
All eternity. Woohoo.
Yes?
Well, oh, are, is there more to that letter?
No, that's basically
it. All right. That was cool.
I hate to throw more shade on our last story, but I went hunting for Ralph Ellis and found him authoring an article at ancient-origins.net in which it mentions that Ralph Ellis is author of Thoth, Architect of the Universe. Thoth, Architect of the Universe, finds verifiable proof that the great henges and pyramids were complex monuments built by a technical civilization.
Oh, boy.
Okay, well, that's
so
fascinating.
Maybe hold off on citing this guy as an authority.
Maybe it's not only the flat earthers that are suffering a resurgence these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thanks for the story, Vern.
Well, you know, you go. It's easy to to get caught with a fake piece of news, as I did today.
Oh yeah, that also happened.
I came across a story that claimed that Pat Robertson had said that going to college turns men into transgenders, and seemed entirely plausible.
Yes,
and so I posted it to the Nonprofits fan group on Facebook. And somebody actually did the legwork of checking to see what the source was, and it was bullshit.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. So it was a satire story, just like the story that came up on the last show where Ken Ham allegedly was going around saying that atheists should pray for people. Or that the reason
museum was doing badly is because of atheist prayers.
I'd be willing to call that one pre-news. It's news from the future.
No,
Pat Robertson will say that at some point.
Okay. We can't
well,
just
say it pretty soon. That guy's getting up there.
Yeah, he is.
We can't just brush this stuff off as it's plausible, because I mean that's exactly the problem. And two organizations that print stuff like this, I mean, I just want to repeat on a regular basis a big old fuck you, because that you are not contributing to the total amount of humor in the world, and you're sowing a whole lot of confusion and irritation. If you want to tell a joke, be funny.
Well,
yeah,
I thought it was
damn
funny.
You, Poe.
It was funny when it was true.
Well, sure. All things that you think are true and funny are less funny if you find out it's bullshit. That's just that's not all the nature.
Things, but.
Yeah, I'll bet you a hot dog that that is a general principle,
and that's worth a whole $7. So
not that hot dog, because I'm not going there.
Ah,
Pinocchio.
So, Russell.
Oh, you actually wanted another?
I guess. I mean, I have one more letter, but it's pretty much more
the Vatican is doing a thing. This comes from The Guardian, which is generally more reliable than that other stuff I read. It says that unleavened bread used for communion during Catholic masses can be genetically modified, but not entirely gluten-free. The church is ruling.
That's right.
It can be genetically modified? Really?
You're going to have GMO Jesus.
GMO Jesus.
Now, see, I'd heard everything except that detail before.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought the whole no gluten-free thing was pretty crazy and worth a discussion. But
so now
And the thing
but
is
– But in light of the fact that they're totally okay with it's been genetically modified. Now
– that's cool.
I happen not to be particularly – concerned about genetically modified foods for various reasons that are probably outside of the atheism nature of the show. But but that, I mean, that the body of Jesus. You can only get to that from, you know, being kind of hard-nosed science skeptic and not motivated by fears of, you know, genetically engineered monsters and stuff.
Right.
And that is not the kind of thinking I ever expect to encounter the out of the Catholic Church. So I don't believe that they're going, oh, no, genetically engineered is okay because it's really just, you know, a different way of doing the same thing that humans have been doing in breeding plants, you know, by selection.
It's microevolution.
The wording of the story is a little
maybe
overblown.
Maybe. I'm gonna back down and let you read more.
All right. The thing is you know, everything old is new again. I could swear I remember years ago that not this particular story, but I remember specifically talking with you about a story where somebody was trying to use bread that was made of something other than wheat. And the church was like, no, because, you know, obviously Jesus's body has to be made of wheat. Anything else would be silly. You know, rice, rice cakes.
Yeah. No, I can't do that. Rice Jesus.
The Vatican said Saturday that the unleavened bread used to celebrate Holy Communion during Catholic masses can be made with genetically modified organisms. There's a link, but they cannot be entirely gluten-free.
Organisms?
Oh, I'm sorry. The word Vatican is just a link to the tag Vatican on the Guardian. So I'm not seeing the exact quote.
So I'm stunned once again by the use of the word organisms there and not wheat, because
it is not in quotes.
That appears to imply that other bread made out of, you know, weasels would be okay.
Wheat is an organism.
It is an organism.
Yeah.
That seems to be a strange lack of specificity on that detail when they've just been so specific.
Cardinal
about gluten. And what is the problem with there being no gluten? I mean, apart from the fact that
there's
darn good reasons to believe the whole gluten thing is wildly overblown. But what is it about the absence of gluten that makes it not spiritually okay? I mean, can Jesus's spiritualcules not latch on to the bread unless it's got gluten in it?
I guess
is the reason? Is there any justification?
Cardinal Robert Serra of the Vatican's Congregation for Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments, that's a title.
Yeah.
said the guidance was needed now that Eucharistic bread and wine can be found in supermarkets and even over the internet. In a letter issued last month, Sarah also reminded bishops that the bread should be made by people distinguished by their integrity and that adding fruit or sugar was a grave abuse.
But
it is altogether forbidden to use wine of doubtful authenticity or providence, he added.
Wow.
Providence.
What is wine of doubtful authenticity?
Does that mean
it's not wine?
Means you have to use the Catholic Church's specific vintner or something.
And you can't use cheap wine.
To say something is an abuse, this thing over here, this is an abuse. But this other thing, that's just not acceptable, right?
Yeah, you can't make it out of ripple. I mean, you know.
I'm focusing on this, abuse versus, you know, unacceptable thing. If it's an abuse to have, like, you know, cherries or raisins in your – if you recall earlier on, we have added the raisins to the to the holy foods. Shut up. I've lost my train of thought now. Thank you, Pope. They're saying the absence of gluten is a bigger deal than the presence of raisins.
Yes.
No, the presence of raisins is completely forbidden.
Oh.
That's what that last thing just said.
Then what was the grave abuse?
The adding raisins is
right.
It's fruit. It didn't. The story. Your story did not say raisins. Your story said fruit or sugar is a grave abuse.
Yes.
Not
forbidden.
Forbidden. The way that absence of gluten is forbidden. Now, I know you're not supposed to abuse things, but there's a difference in the there's words have meaning.
I'm not sure that grave abuse is softer than forbidden. They could both be forbidden, but he could be emphasizing how bad an abuse the fruit is.
I don't know, man.
It
sounds like grave abuse is weaker than forbidden.
I think so too.
Grave abuse is necrophilia.
Yeah, grave abuse. Oh.
Right. I don't know. So there's absolutely no explanation in there of why. There's no explanation of why. It's important that we specify these rules because you can get this stuff in supermarkets now, he says. But that's not why. That's there's a situation – I mean, if those rules already existed, the reason why you'd have to tell the general public could be because they get it in grocery stores, right?
Right.
Because now the general public needs to know.
Of course, then again
– It's not just priests using in-house bread.
They could simply say that God forbids it and be done there. They don't need a rational explanation.
Okay. Well, I think they do. That's why I'm sitting here doing this.
Oh, I was I found something, but I think it was the wrong thing earlier.
Uh-oh. Is it relevant now?
No. I mean, yeah, I was trying to track down the original letter and find out why. I mean, first of all, I really want to know. Okay. Hang on. Okay, so this comes straight from Vatican.va, which I assume.
Okay. Are we doing this for your segment now?
No. That's a good question.
You want to reserve it for your segment?
I had something for my segment, but I wasn't sold on it.
It's not time for your segment yet.
No,
so
it's
if we
not.
Want to do the news story. Yeah, now, let's do it.
Let's finish the news story.
We will get to the bottom of this today.
Okay, so you want to move on for the moment?
Yeah, let's move on.
All right, then.
We'll be back.
All right.
Hugo from Brazil says, you seems to be look for the longest name. I have a candidate to offer.
Uh-oh.
How do we get on long names?
Because we were trying to figure out how long the name field has to
right.
be.
And this
on
was,
the
this
book
is
of
also
life.
Related to the to the yeah, yeah. To the Piece St. Peter and the Book of Life thing. Right. Because Russell was analyzing what the database requirements were.
Yeah, that's
be.
Right. Yes. I'm glad somebody picked up on that.
So Hugo has a candidate. Pedro de Alcantara, João Carlos, Leopoldo Salvador, Bibiano Francisco Javier de Paula, Leocadio Miguel Gabriel Rafael Gorgonza de Braganca e Bourbon, unquote.
Wow.
This is the full name of Peter II of Brazil, the second emperor of Brazil.
Oh, his not father, the same Peter. I was going right, to say he right. doesn't necessarily have no. to read that name.
Right. His father, Peter I of Brazil, and also Peter IV of Portugal, have a long name too. Long names seem to have been a tradition in the house of Bragança, royal family of Portugal. If St. Peter has the most important job in heaven, I wonder what the common Christians do in heaven. And that's getting back to the point that TJ raised. Okay, Hugo, that's fine. But now I'm going to take that as a challenge because when we were talking about long names, I quoted back the little bit I could remember from the incredibly long name in the Monty Python Monty Python's Flying Circus comedy show's bit about Johann Gambleputty. Devon, Osvern, Splenden, Schlitter, Kraskren, Fry, Digger, Dingle Dangle, Dongle, Dungle, Burstein, Von Knacker, Thrashel, Thrasher, Applebanger, Horowitz, Tickle, Lensick, Gander, Naughty, Speltinkle, Grandlich, Grumblemeyer, Spelter, Wasser, Kurstlich, Himbleesen, Bonwagen, Guten Abend, Bitten, Ein Nürnberger, Bratwurstel, Gerspurten, Mitz, Weimach, Luber, Hundsfoot, Gumber, Aber, Schundanker, Kabfleisch, Mitter, Ocker, von Hauptkopf of Ulm. Which, if you dig up the right episode, you can find
right.
the comedy bit where they talk about Johann Gamblebutty, Devon, Osper, Splendid, Schlitter, Kraskren, Fried Digger, Daggle.
Well, that's very interesting. But who was Johann Gamblebutty? Von Ausfern, Splendid, Schlitter, Kraskren, Von Freindigger, Dingle, Dangle, Dongle, Dungle, Burstein, Von Knacker, Thrasher, Applebanger, Horowitz, Tickle-Lensick, Grander, Naughty, Speltinkle, Grandlich, Grumblemeyer, Speltevasser, Kursten, Himble, Eisen, Bonwagen, Gutenabend, Bitte ein Hamburger, Bratwurstel, Gerspurten, Mitz, Weimach, Luber, Hundsfoot, Guber, Aber, Schönedanker, Kalb, Fleisch, Mitter, Auker, von Hops, Hautkopf of Ulm.
Well, I don't know. I couldn't tell you, Russell, but I think Dennis met him once. Dennis? It's right there. It's crossed off. It's up in the corner.
Ah.
So, can you help us out?
Well, I guess, you know, who was he? Well, I mean, it's whoever Johann Gamblebutty Devon Austin Splenden Schlitterkrass.
I don't think your heart's in it.
Bun Fried Dagger Dingle Dongle Dangle Donger Dungle Bursting Von Napter Thrasher Applebanger Horowitz Tickleck Granny Naughty Spinkle Grandlich Gumbermeyer Spettle. I'm only halfway through.
Of all,
no, I can't do it.
Why don't you do the thing the guy did in the skit and just die in the middle of saying?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's enough.
Man. But of course,
they said it more times than that in the.
But of course, he was a fictional character.
It's also funnier if you've actually memorized it.
Yeah, yes. And can rattle it off properly. We are not Monty Python.
Yeah.
Much as we try.
I don't know how they did it on Monty Python. That was amazing.
Probably a lot of takes.
Yes. Yeah,
probably.
All right. Well, thank you, Hugo. That would be back to you then, Russell. Are you able to resume the news?
Okay. Well, apparently this is news at abc.net.au.
Right.
Research shows that men most likely to abuse their wives are evangelical Christians who attend church sporadically. Church leaders in Australia say they abhor abuse of any kind, but advocates say the church is not just failing to sufficiently address domestic violence, it is both enabling and concealing it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just not surprising?
Hmm?
Is this study about just Australia?
The study was done in Australia.
Okay.
And it says this is the second installment of an ABC News investigation into domestic violence and religion.
Uh-huh.
The first segment is on domestic violence and Islam, which we can also go into. But I feel like that's a no duh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The culprits were obvious. It was the menopause or the devil. Who else could be blamed? Peter screamed at his wife in nightly tirades for her alleged insubordination, for her stupidity, her lack of sexual pliability, her refusal to join him on the tornado ride at a Queensland water park, her annoying friendship with a woman called Ratface, for her sheer complete failure as a woman.
Wow.
The night before Sally finally left her husband in the townhouse they lived in, he told her she was also failing her spiritual duties And there's a quote from him with some swearing in it. So.
Right.
Yeah. Peter opened his Bible and read out some verses. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. And then that's from Ephesians. And then from Timothy, let a woman learn in silence with all submissiveness. I permit no woman to teach or have authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain silent. When we speak of domestic violence and the cultural factors that foment it, one crucial element missing from the discussion has been religion. While it's generally agreed that inequality between the sexes can foster and cultivate environments where men seek to control or abuse women, in Australia, there has been very little public debate about how this might impact people in male-led congregations and religious communities, especially those where women are told to be silent and submit to male authority. So they're saying specifically in Australia, there has been a lack of discussion about it, because they also go on to mention that there's been extensive analysis in the United States and the UK. And so this study apparently,
to the same conclusion.
It seems like this study indicates that, yes, there is a strong correlation between having those kinds of beliefs and acting on them in an abusive way.
Yep.
And nobody at this table is falling down with shock over this.
Yeah, right? No.
I'm reminded of another study that I saw covered in a news item recently. I don't know how far back this dates, but it basically was a study done in Europe that showed that children become less empathetic toward others when raised in religion.
Interesting.
Yep.
And not just Christianity. This was a study across, you know, a wide range of different major religions, including Islam. Mm-hmm. And I posted a link to that study in a political thread on Facebook.
Sure.
You would be surprised that – you would not be surprised that they did not want to hear it. And my reaction to this thing about the
abuse?
Spousal abuse – is that I'm not sure that if you told religious people the religious people who are doing it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That they would be shocked at all or bothered at all.
Yeah, because,
we're supposed to have the power to do that. So what's the big deal?
Right.
Whereas they believe, and this was part of this other study, right? The parents believed that their children had become nicer when the studies showed that the children had become meaner.
Right. Mm.
And so you show that to Christian parents, and that really bothers them.
Huh.
That and when I say bothers, I mean they totally weren't gonna totally were not gonna accept
they
it.
They go into denial.
Yeah. Did we ever do that story, the children becoming less empathetic from religion on the show?
I can't recall.
Yeah. Should probably bring it up sometime.
It was between episodes and ran into that. Also, that's just in Australia. So
right.
Well,
as with gun control, everybody knows that just because things are a certain way in Australia doesn't mean it would happen that way here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. So I got some. I got some long ones. Let's get into this one. Nicholas in Florida writes, I recently began speaking with the pastor of a megachurch at the behest of a close theist friend.
Okay.
I felt slightly out of my league since this pastor has several degrees and has written books on theology. During the discussion, he laid out his hierarchy of authorities in life: Bible, history, reason/logic, and personal experience, in that order.
Uh-huh.
Bible on the top. After at least he put personal experience below reason and logic. After discussion of the flaws related to placing logic third in line, he brought up Lessing's ditch.
What?
The basic idea of Lessing's ditch is that historical truths cannot be evaluated the same way logical or scientific truths can be.
Okay, partially with that. Let's see where he goes with it, though.
His example was that once we set a subjective level of evidence required to believe something, we create this ditch, since many historical events do not meet such evidence. We create an artificial barrier to belief even when evidence is presented.
This is not the first time I've encountered this argument.
Wow.
I've got things to say about it.
Okay, so
I think we can, in fact, at this point in the letter, stop and address that bit.
Okay.
Because he goes on to his... Well, let me read this little bit. He says, we'll skip a bit. What do you all make of Lessing's ditch? Yes, we place subjective evidence requirements on our beliefs, but I do not believe it is unreasonable to ask why such an important event, the resurrection, would have such little empirical evidence and would require a leap of faith to begin with. Okay.
Right. So, first of all, I hope you realize you didn't need to be intimidated by this guy's degrees, because they don't have anything they don't have a strong basis for their arguments, whether or not generally, the more they study, the more they just learn to bullshit. And what you'll notice in this case is that he didn't say a word about the plausibility of the actual argument he was trying to defend. Instead, he just tried to state in a general way an argument that boils down to you don't need to have standards when it comes to evaluating history.
Right. Right? Which has got to be bullshit.
Yeah.
You have to have some standards.
Right. Like you can – as long as there is some level of uncertainty in a claim about the past, we might as well just accept any old nonsense that we want to. And that is definitely not how historians operate.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
An example I like to give is that it is difficult to say there are various lines of evidence that point to the fact that Julius Caesar existed, for example.
Right.
But there are also a lot of claims that Julius Caesar was, among his own people, considered as a god who ascended to heaven when he died.
Right.
Historians are perfectly capable of accepting one based on the evidence and throwing out the other.
Yeah.
Just because some things about the past are have some level of gray area doesn't mean you just throw out all your standards.
Right. And, you know, the history, the passage of years is an actual thing that could make it difficult to have have access to the direct evidence. And but there's all kinds of other things that could make the direct evidence hard to find. If a guy argues – or a guy claims, you know, a energy beam came down from the sky and beamed me into an alien spacecraft, right?
Yeah.
There wouldn't be any physical evidence left from that. That doesn't mean you therefore have to believe it.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter what the justification is, not what the explanation is for the lack of evidence, right? Sure, some things are going to be harder to support than others, but that doesn't mean things that are hard to support you have to just accept. That's bullshit. Yeah,
absolutely.
That's not unfair.
Yeah, and he's willing to believe things that happen right in front of him, but not willing, you know, contemporaneously, right? And yet not willing to accept things that happened years ago. He's saying, oh, that's all subjective. So
no, he's saying the opposite of that. He's saying these things I believe happened a long time ago, and because they happened a long time ago, there's not much physical evidence to support them.
Right.
Therefore, you have to believe them, because otherwise you're just using that passage of time and thus the paucity of the evidence as a justification for not believing the thing I'm telling you believe.
Okay, right. Nah, I thought he was more rational than that.
No, okay, no. Oh, good grief.
Yeah, no, right. Okay. Never mind.
And yet, just try, Nicholas, try walking in and telling the guy, you know what? It's an amazing thing. A guy from a time traveler, from the Victorian era in a Jules Verne time machine,
yes,
materialized in my living room last night, right?
Right.
And he asked if he could have a Twinkie, and I gave him a Twinkie. Right, and he took it back with him to the Victorian era, and tell him, now you have to just believe what I said, because nothing in what I said
leaves
any evidence for you to evaluate it. Therefore, you have to just believe me. Try that. See how that goes.
Now, if the priest were just, or whoever he was arguing with, was just going to leverage this argument to say, you cannot definitively disprove my statement, that it's, you can maybe go with him there, but that doesn't obligate you to then accept the statement as true.
And it's not your responsibility to disprove his statement. Right. It's his responsibility to prove his statement if he wants you to believe it.
Is this like the obverse of the, were you there?
It kind of is.
Sort of, yeah.
It's kind of is. It's kind of not the obverse. It's the, it's
kind of the
you
exact
weren't
same
there,
thing.
Therefore you have to believe what we're telling
you.
Wow. Because you weren't there, you couldn't know it's not true, so you have to assume that it is true. Because we're telling you.
Well, shifting the burden, it's just, oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Doesn't matter, crazy. Dude. I'm sorry if we should look up this Lessing ditch thing and see if what we're dealing with is a misapplication of a principle that might actually be a valid thing.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be surprised.
Or whether it's just a piece of bullshit that was thought up by some religious nitwit.
The first hit is from theopedia.com, so I don't have a lot of hope
very
for
well,
it.
Yeah.
Gotthold Lessing lived from 1729 to 1781, and he argued that there is a ditch between history and eternal truths that cannot be crossed. As a result, revelation in history is not possible, for historical truth cannot be demonstrated. So, what he was citing at you, he was just throwing out an old-sounding name to make it sound like it had credibility.
Right.
It doesn't seem like this guy has any particular authority in the field of history.
What you're not taking into account is that Mr. Lessing died in 1781.
Oh, that's true.
And there's not a lot of evidence to support the fact that he existed and that he said these things and that what he said was right. Therefore, you have to believe it.
Exactly. Yeah.
To not believe it is to be unfair to those who do.
I mean, hell, because the less evidence there is, the more reason you have to believe it. That's just science.
Right.
I just want to crawl up my own asshole. Jesus Christ, what a terrible, terrible.
I think that's enough for the Lessing's ditch thing. But Nicholas's letter goes on and goes to some other places. So this pastor presented his six proofs of the resurrection, which I have listed below. But to save time, I think we've all heard these arguments before.
You want to just skim them?
Impossible.
I will. After falling victim to Godwin's law and telling me, quote, I could deny that the Holocaust happened because there's no video evidence, I was too flustered to address this new
but
concept.
But that is not the standard.
Ditch, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are no historians who refuse to believe in the Holocaust based on the lack of video.
There is a movie coming, by the way, which I've seen previews to, about a woman who in Britain, this story happened recently, and now there's a movie of it. She said something critical of some Holocaust denier, and he sued her for defamation.
Right.
And apparently this all goes to court, right?
Yeah.
So it's a battle between a rationalist and a Holocaust denier lunatic. Looking forward to that movie, and I don't know what the name of it is off the top of my head. So anyway, his six proofs of the resurrection are as follows. He doesn't say whether these six proofs are in a particular order.
Proofs of the resurrection.
So here we go. One, the tomb in which Jesus was buried was discovered by a group of women on the Sunday following the crucifixion.
Oh, yes. The specific one that has four different contradictory versions.
Ever. This would not be something written about a group that wanted credibility given the place of women in society. Geez. The narrative itself is odd and points to the intrigue as to its veracity.
So this is actually the same argument, right?
It's insanity makes it true. Yes.
Yeah. Why? This story is so crazy that it has to be true.
It just might work.
Because why would somebody make up a ridiculous story? Right. Nobody ever does that.
No. So you're saying that a story is more likely to be believed if it's crazy in this way? So nobody knew that until after this happened? Because someone at the time could not have said, I'll make my story more credible, you see, by saying that women found it. Right.
Whoa.
Considering that women are, you know, are thought so badly of in my culture, this will make people believe my story more. So it's only possible for human beings to understand that after the fact. It's not possible for human beings to understand that before the fact and do it on purpose.
Of course not.
Of course, I don't even think that happened.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not saying that's, I think what we have here is a fucking myth and various interpretations of the myths that are not rooted in reality on any level to the point where anybody cared about the place of women in society.
But I really like this argument because that means Harry Potter exists.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it has time travel.
It's
Harry
so Potter to exist. It must be true.
Why would anyone make it up?
Yeah. Right. No one would make up Harry Potter. That's ridiculous.
So, but that's I think is the self-defeating part of this argument is if you can tell that that would make the story more believable, right?
Right.
Then you can do it on purpose.
Yeah.
But you would have known that I would do it on purpose, and therefore I can clearly not choose the story.
Yes.
That's one.
Truly, he has a dizzying intellect.
Two, Jesus' disciples had real experiences with one whom they believed the risen Christ. They wrote about it in the Bible, the most verified work of written account of its time.
Wow.
It's a source of historical record. Okay. No. That's just not true. There's a lot of claims of the validity of the Bible, but that you really have to apply a much tougher standard to a thing that has a whole fucking worldwide cult devoted to believing in it. You guys want to say anything specific about that?
It's the old, well, if you know, the apostles were willing to die for their beliefs, therefore their beliefs must be true. That's kind of the
assuming that these apostles existed.
Yep.
You're assuming that they're the ones that did the writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tracy Harris did an entire TV episode on this particular. She also has a blog comment on this argument. I mean, a very long blog post. The apostles and what their willingness to die means about the truth of their claims. Nothing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's and another thing is that a lot of times Christians will say something is well sourced because the stories in the Bible will say like there were 500 witnesses to this thing,
right?
Which I can do too. Like Jeff's friend who walked in and did what was the thing that you said? What was the story you just made up?
The time traveler from Victorian.
Yeah, the time traveler
wanted a Twinkie.
When the time traveler walked into my study, 700 people were all crammed into my study and watching him.
They came with him on his time machine.
They all saw it.
They went back.
Went back.
Right.
It's true.
Yes. Plus, again, you've noticed that when a bunch of people say that that a thing is believable, that it makes it more likely that other people will believe it.
Yeah.
And these people who said that they believed it were people who were, like, you know, Christians.
Uh-huh.
So they couldn't have realized that if they said that it was believable, if they all said it was believable, other people were more likely to believe it, and they weren't motivated to try to get other people to believe it by saying that it's believable.
Right.
How does that work?
Three, as a result of the preaching of these disciples, which had the resurrection at its center, the Christian church was established and grew despite tremendous forces acting against it, including persecution, plague, and popular religious culture.
Ugh.
Right.
True, because it's popular.
Therefore, every religion that has ever had any success is true.
Right.
Right? Islam is true.
Yeah, obviously.
Look at all the people today that hate Muslims, right? And still, they're the fastest growing religion. So their interpretation must be correct.
Yep.
Rodney Stark built a sociological model of this in his book, The Rise of Christianity. For example, how do you explain a group of men going to their death, martyrdom, for a story they knew to be a lie? The answer is they didn't know it was a lie. You know why they didn't know it was a lie?
Because they were gullible.
Carefully engineered by its original writers to do things in their writing that would make it be believable. And centuries of Christian scholars saying that it's believable.
Mm-hmm.
And that resulted in a bunch of people believing in it and getting killed.
There you go.
Four, Tacitus's account in 115 AD.
Oh.
Christus, from whom the name had its origin, suffered the extreme penalty during the time of Tiberius at the hands of one of our procurators, Pontius Pilate, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, no, Tacitus is not a thing.
Check out ironchariots.org and just Google Tacitus.
And five, Josephus. You'll find him right,
check him out
right
too.
Next door.
Right.
Yep.
And that was the last one.
Parade of forgeries.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
That was a long letter, and maybe it's time for a thing now.
Yeah.
Should it be your thing or Dennis's thing?
Oh, Dennis, do you have a thing?
I have a thing.
Go, Russell.
I really want to take a look at this letter, but I'll try to keep it short because we've already hit the main points. But the letter is the subject of today's
Shit Internet Apologists Say.
Yes.
So
even trying to fake out the gentleman in the control room, they were still right on the ball.
Of course. I wasn't trying to fake them out.
I was. I was by bringing up the specter of maybe Dennis will go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got to keep on their toes.
What is this letter you've got?
This is the letter that was...
So this is posted at vatican.va.
Right. This is the letter of explanation of all of the
Yeah, and I think we mainly want to read it to verify whether the news sources that were citing it were citing it accurately.
Sure.
Okay. And this guy doesn't really count as an internet apologist, does he?
Crazy. He mentioned the internet.
All right. Go ahead.
And the letter is now on the internet, as these things tend to be.
Fair enough.
Sure.
Let's see. Last month, one particular letter published in the church circular drew much attention, says QZ.com, and they had the link to it.
Okay.
At the request of the Holy Father, Pope Francis, the Congregation for Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments is writing to diocesan bishops to remind them that it falls to them above all to duly provide for all that is required for that's the celebration of the Lord's Supper. Skimming. Until recently, it was certain religious ceremonies who took care of baking the bread and making the wine for the celebration of the Eucharist. Today, however, these materials are also sold in supermarkets and other stores and even over the internet. Bum. In order to remove any doubt about the validity of the matter for the Eucharist, we suggest giving guidance, guaranteeing certification. The norms of the Eucharistic matter are given in Canon
924 of the CIC, and in numbers 319 through 323 of the Institutio Generalis Missalis Romani.
So not the Bible, but the like in-house Catholic documents.
Yeah, the fan fiction.
Okay.
And have been explained in the instruction Redemptionis Sacramentum. I mean, Catholics in particular are particularly into this, right? I mean, the people who are speaking on behalf of the church, like the Pope actually is channeling God, so everything he says is infallible until another Pope contradicts him, I guess.
I like all these organizations involved in, you know, big Eucharist. So it's like
– yeah. And he quotes from them, and of course they're 1,000 years old, so they're even more boring.
Right.
The bread used in the celebration of the – oh, I'm sorry. This was issued by a congregation in 2004, so it's maybe not
– ancient times.
Yes.
There's no physical evidence that this was ever actually written.
Quote, the bread used in the celebration of the most holy Eucharistic sacrifice must be unleavened, purely of wheat – and this might be the exact thing we covered on the nonprofits back 13 years ago, it follows, therefore, that bread made from another substance, even if it is grain or if it is mixed with another substance different from wheat to such an extent that it would not commonly be considered wheat bread, does not constitute valid matter for confecting the sacrifice and the Eucharistic sacrament. And the wine must be natural from the fruit of the grape, pure and incorrupt, not mixed with other substances.
Right. So
you can't cut your wine.
If you do make it out of different substances, does – when it turns into Jesus in you, is it like a transporter accident
It doesn't turn into Jesus
in
you.
Fly?
If you make it from other things, it turns into Osiris or it turns into Harry Potter or – it turns into Darth Vader or, right, like some kind of pumpernickel. That's probably Darth Vader.
Find your lack of Eucharist disturbing.
Now, right here.
Angel food cake. At the you're going to be noshing on the flesh of St. Peter.
Mm. I find your lack of wheat disturbing.
All right.
Wait. This is important. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Because this was in question. The same congregation also decided that Eucharistic matter made with genetically modified organisms can be considered valid matter. CF, Letter to the Prefect of the Congregation for Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments, 9 December 2013.
So Eucharistic matters. This is another entry in the table of
Eucharistic
elements.
Eucharistic matter. You know. There's already like a Europum or something.
So if we ever eventually genetically engineer like an intelligent life form from wheat.
There you go.
And we still call it wheat. Then you could like kill it and make bread out of it and eat that, and that's Jesus.
How about bread made by a Star Trek replicator?
Jesus automatically.
Ooh,
if we turn.
I like it.
Replicated wheat.
Replicated wheat.
Has it still got gluten?
Yeah.
Sure.
Why not?
But we call it wheat.
It's made from a collection of matter that's just, you know, elements, and then assembled into gluten wheat.
Right. That's all right. They're all right with that.
I'm confused because is it or is it not a fucking miracle when God turns the bread into the flesh of Jesus? I mean, can he not miracle?
Different materials?
Stuff?
Yeah, you'd think.
Like, is it lead?
So here's the thing you have to understand about gods and their willingness to perform miracles on command.
Yeah.
Okay. In just about every tradition, and I've learned this through my many, many years of experience in fantasy role-playing games, right?
Yeah.
There's rituals.
Right.
Right? Like, the Necronomicon that spells out the rituals for summoning up the great old ones.
Mm-hmm.
They're very specific about
how,
what you have to do. And the danger inherent in all of these these ancient rituals when summoning up like, you know, elder gods and things.
Right.
The danger is not so much that the elder god will appear and kill you because that's what the ritual is for.
Right.
The ritual is for summoning up that elder god to do something, to smite some city for you, right? Or liquefy one of your enemies or whatever, right? That if you do it right, it's fine.
Yeah.
The problem is these are always ancient texts full of obscure, archaic terms.
Uh-huh.
And the question is, how is it that you do it right? Because if you get it wrong, you might get
bad things.
Azathoth or Nyarlathotep or something materializing in your living room right next to the time travel.
Come forth, smite my enemies. And what's this Pikachu doing here? No!
That's not part of the ritual. And he said you had to sacrifice living things to me. So yeah. And then they go crazy and they drag you off to their thing. This is why figuring out what was meant in ancient texts for summoning rituals or rituals to get a god to do a magical thing for you, to get it ritually correct, is such a big fucking deal.
What I find irresponsible is they're summoning bits
believed to be a big fucking deal.
They're summoning bits of Jesus without a pentagram. I mean,
Not
a magic circle to protect you. It's just insane. Completely irresponsible.
I'd love to see the story where they summon up all these bits of Jesus and they carefully preserve them and then they sew them back together and summon the lightning to animate them.
Frankenstein Jesus.
That's the explanation of why.
Wow.
You get among weird cultists.
Why they have to be such sticklers.
Yeah, they believe they have to be sticklers. Otherwise, not only could you – and this is why I think some of the terminology of the offensiveness of doing it the other way is you're going to tick off the god.
Right.
If you try to do the Eucharist with, you know, corn muffins, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could not only fail to get your taste of Jesus, but also take off God. And then who knows what he might do?
Right.
Because the ritual's then spiraling out of control.
Okay, I'm done with that.
That's awesome.
If anyone is a glutton for punishment and wants to find this, the title is
cool.
Circular Letter to Bishops on the Bread and Wine for the Eucharist.
Wow.
Okay, how are we doing on time? I don't have my...
We got like almost 15 minutes left,
I think we should probably jump straight into Dennis's question.
I have a question, yeah.
What's your question?
Why is Judas the villain?
Oh, this is a good one.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, did he betray Jesus? I mean, well, it's my understanding that what happened to Jesus was supposed to happen to Jesus. Had to happen to Jesus.
So,
and it's a prophecy.
Yeah.
Which means that if it wasn't Judas, it would have to be one of the other apostles.
Was it was the prophecy that it would be an apostle? They didn't even know there were going to be apostles.
Well, didn't Jesus say at the Last Supper that one among you will be
betrayed? Oh, right. Jesus. You're right. I was thinking, for some reason, my mind thought that you were talking about Old Testament prophecy.
It was like
a last week prophecy from Jesus.
Right. Jesus uttered it, it's got to be true.
Right.
If it wasn't Judas, it had to be one of the other apostles.
So let's look at some possible explanations. One, Jesus already hated Judas and just thought he'd stick him with this thing, right?
Right.
So the prophecy was meant to cause Judas, who Jesus already didn't like for other reasons, right?
Right.
To also be the bad guy in this. It's not, Jesus just doesn't get let off the hook from Jesus's dislike of him just because he was then roped into being the actor that does the thing.
There's another explanation.
Okay.
And that's Judas did it so one of the other apostles wouldn't have to. He took it upon himself
to
make the ultimate sacrifice of his own salvation.
Yeah, but your question is, why is Judas the bad guy?
I'm saying he's the good guy. I'm saying he's the hero.
So show that my explanation is wrong. Because I'm answering your question. You're not answering your question. You're rebuffing answers to your question, which I don't think is fair.
I think, actually, as with many things, TVTropes.org has something relevant to say about this.
Oh, sure.
The entry is Batman Gambit. A Batman Gambit is a plan.
Sure, we talked Lovecraft. Now let's talk Batman.
A Batman Gambit is a plan that revolves entirely around people doing exactly what you expect them to do. This trope relies heavily on flaw exploitation manipulating, although it can work with virtues instead of flaws just as easily. Sometimes the flaw is that the villains are so predictable that they'll take the first chance they have to do something mean and underhanded. Named after Batman, who is known as the world's greatest detective, and through careful analysis, he can often predict his foe's actions to psychic-like accuracy. Uh-huh. So, if Batman gets betrayed by the Joker, even though he predicted it, and even though it fits into the plan that he built around it, he could still be – the Joker can still be the bad guy in that case, can't he?
Well, it – could be, but does the Joker hang and disembowel himself in remorse over betraying Batman? No,
almost
I don't
never.
Think so.
Dennis?
Yeah?
How can anybody be a bad guy? I know what you think about the nature of reality.
No, I'm not going that way.
I think it's your question. I think you have to confront the fact that as far as you're concerned, there's no such thing as a bad guy. That everybody's just wind-up toys doing only exactly what they had to do.
Let's not get into that.
Well.
That's a whole nother I have a question, okay?
Okay. Mm.
But it's like, you know.
Here's
apostle would have had to do God's dirty work. It's like roll a 12-sided die. Which one?
I'll come at it from a different angle.
Okay.
Okay. So at the beginning of time, yeah. Right? God set the initial conditions, and being omnipotent, he got everything exactly the way he wanted.
Uh-huh.
Being omniscient, he knew exactly what was going to happen as a result of those initial conditions that he sent, right?
Okay.
That he set.
Yeah.
Therefore, God knew at the instant of creation that Judas was going to do that.
And he made that universe where that happened.
And God knew every single bad – who. God could have made you a list of all the people that were going to do bad things throughout history.
Sure.
Right. So the answer is why Judas is the bad guy is because God made him the bad guy.
It is written.
Does that make him the bad guy? I mean, when you look
Christianity,
at it,
yes.
The ultimate sacrifice.
In Christianity, yes.
Wow.
True.
It can just be your nature to be a bad guy, and God gave you your nature. Bam, you're done.
So you're a bad guy for furthering Jesus's purpose.
Yes, that cult, the Christian cult that I couldn't
Jesus's
remember the name of last time.
Jesus' purpose is to be killed.
Who are the guys that believe that Judas only a certain number of people are going to be saved? Those guys, right? Who was that? That was the...
Starts with an E, I forget.
Jehovah's Witnesses.
I forgot them again. Those guys specifically believe, from their interpretation of the Bible, that a finite number of people are destined to go to heaven, and everybody else is destined to go to hell.
Right.
Just bam. Right.
Yeah, for no reason.
So within Christianity, well, they think that is a reason. To them,
it's an arbitrary definition.
They don't believe it's arbitrary.
It's a die roll.
They don't believe that that makes it invalid.
Oh, God.
That you're asking a question about what they believe.
I mean, this is what happens when we go down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, I know.
I'm totally with you that this is bullshit, right?
Right.
Totally with you, but this is the answer. They're totally comfortable with the idea that there are people who are just bad because God made them bad.
Yeah.
And that badness may be because God made them to be bad, even if they were not bad at first. He made them and engineered everything at the dawn of time when he set up the initial conditions so that they were going to run into the devil, right? Satan, and Satan would corrupt them.
Specific,
and they'd wind up bad.
Specific biblical example here. the story of Moses actually says that Pharaoh is all set. Like, he, you know, few plagues go through and he's done. He's like, all right, fine, take your people and get out of here.
No, let's harden his freaking heart.
Yeah, it specifically says God hardened his heart. And that's fine. That's, I mean, according to their logic.
In a worldview where there is an omnipotent tyrant that runs everything, who is always right.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
He can make people bad guys and punish them for being bad guys, and everything's
even fine. Even if they help the tyrant. Right.
Oh, sure.
They can help the tyrant.
He can then also be Batman. can also be, or Jesus, can also be Batman and say, I know, I'm going to give my little speech. I'm not going to tell you which one of you it is, but I know because Dad told me, right? they can do shit like that, and they're still off the hook. Within that worldview, that's good and evil. Good is whatever God wants. For whatever reason he wants, and however he pulls it off.
No. Good is not just what God wants. Evil is also what God wants. Everything is what God wants.
Good is what God says is good, and evil is what God says is evil.
Yeah, arbitrarily but says he makes it all. Good and evil.
Because it says in the Bible, God creates evil.
Yeah. Right.
Back on the Judas question, I recall a Mad TV sketch.
Yes, which is awesome.
You know exactly what I mean. The Terminator, right?
Yeah.
Terminator goes back in time and is there to protect Jesus, who wants no part of it.
Right.
You know.
Judas will betray you.
Yes. Blah, 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 blah. He shoots Judas, and then Jesus brings him back to life. He's like, stop doing that.
Stop doing that.
Yep.
No, he will betray you.
Yeah, man. Yeah. No, that's, obviously, anybody with a sensible view of right and wrong knows that if you set somebody up for the fall, right, they're not entirely culpable, and you for setting them up are
pretty
culpable.
Much.
And the specifics determine where that balance lies, right? Yeah. Sure, we're totally with you.
What did Judas expect to get out of it?
30 pieces
Judas
of silver.
Expect to get out of it? Yeah, he expected to get the money.
But
it's in the Bible.
But he believed everything that Jesus told him.
No, he didn't.
Necessarily, yeah, he did.
No. I don't.
Didn't
think
we just have
canon.
That argument?
What?
That
what?
The apostles absolutely believed everything?
I don't think we concluded.
Christians can't have it both ways.
Actually,
if Christianity is true because they were willing to die for their beliefs,
I hate being the defender of the Christian side, but that's unfair. Just because this nitwit said that because there's Bible books named after the disciples, therefore those disciples wrote those books, therefore the disciples believed, there's no book of Judas.
No,
so it
no,
doesn't mean Judas was a believer.
No,
so that's unfair.
He was one of the apostles, wasn't he?
There's no book of Judas. Judas did not write a book. Actually, though, isn't there in the Apocrypha?
Matter.
There's no
the
book
of relevant.
The argument is not that all apostles are completely reliable or faithful.
Yeah.
The argument is that the ones who were willing to die positively defending the divinity of Jesus must have been really sincere about it,
right,
or they would never have
right.
done that.
It's a bullshit argument, so, but it doesn't mean
the
they can't then
didn't
say
necessarily believe what.
Well, not
bullshit.
All of them.
Jesus
obviously, not all of them. If you went to this Christian and said, "What about Judas?" he'd say, "Well, obviously that's an exception." And the existence of an exception.
So your rule is
the
fucked.
Exception. The existence of an exception is not the problem with this argument. The problem with this argument is the disciples didn't write those fucking books, moron. Religious scholars are pretty much agreement on this, that the whole premise of this assumption is wrong. But even if it was right, Judas isn't one of the guys that wrote one of the books. He's not one of the disciples covered by this argument. And that's unfair to try to hold them to that.
I don't think so.
I'm with
okay.
you.
How far do we want to keep going on this?
Never mind.
So, I mean, but for just in for what do you want is for responses to your questions? What? Do you want to know what the Christians think, or do you want to know?
Yeah, I want to know what the Christians think.
How just... what they think is bullshit, because you kind of have to know what they think for us to say why it's bullshit. What they think is God gets to make people bad guys, and they're still bad guys, even though it's all God's fault. That's what
I
they
don't
think.
Think they would agree with you.
I
don't think they would agree with that characterization as you just phrased it. Do you?
How the Bible says
I mean, they obviously know that that's wrong.
Why do they obviously know that that's wrong? What's obvious about that?
Well, if God makes you good or makes you evil,
yeah,
then he's punishing robots. That's the one thing they don't want.
It somehow magically works out, though, Dennis. You've had these discussions. You've had these discussions with Christians. Just because you and I can see that that's bullshit does not mean that's not what they think. They think what they say they think. They think that God making you good or making you evil is not a violation of your free will. In a way that you know from our previous discussions, think there is a way to look at that that is valid. But it doesn't have a God in it.
Right, right. Man, I'd have to ask some Christians that.
Okay.
I don't know, man.
I think you've got homework then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know on the wrong show if you want to talk to Christians.
I am.
All righty. Wow. Do we still have time? I don't have a clock in front of me. So
no.
We have no time?
This is 9 o'clock.
We'll leave everyone with that, with that dispute on the table. thanks, everyone, for listening once again. And Dennis, take us out.
All right. Well, we hope the show has been informative. We'll be back on the air in 2 weeks on the 2nd of August. Until then, keep out a sharp eye, listen for the praying, and be ready to run at a moment's notice. We leave you with I Am the Satellite by Brian Stieksma. Hey there, brother, don't you know the guy upstairs left us years ago? So there ain't no fate except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. Don't tell me life doesn't hurt, and that you don't need the people, cause you've got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky, because there ain't nothing there but the satellites.